the Seraph of the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, explicit references to our serpent god ancestors have been all but eliminated over the centuries through a long process of selection and editing. When allusions are found in the scriptures, they are interpreted as merely allegories. There is a strange incident related to the Book of Numbers concerning a bronze or brazen serpent, which raises many questions that are never fully addressed by biblical scholars. In the second year of the Exodus, after they had left the comforts of Mount Sinai and were struggling across the wasteland, the tribes had a skirmish with the king of Arad in the Negev and prevailed after much difficulty. The incident of the brazen serpent happened then. They set out from Mount Hor by the road to the Red Sea to skirt the land of Edom. But the people grew restive on the journey, and the people spoke against the Lord and against Moses. "Why did you make us leave Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread and water, and we have come to loathe this miserable food." The Lord sent seraph serpents among the people. They bit the people, and many of the Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, "We sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Intercede with the Lord to take away the serpents from us." And Moses interceded for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Make a seraph figure and mount it on a standard. And if anyone who is bitten looks at it, he shall recover." Moses made a bronzen serpent and mounted it on a standard. And when anyone was bitten by a serpent, he would look at the brazen serpent and recover. It is difficult to escape the conclusion that the meaning of the incident is obviously idolatry, an activity forbidden in the scriptures. The Hebrew word seraph is an unusual one and appears only a few times in the books of the Old Testament. In Isaiah 14 and 30, the seraph is referred to as Mi Ofef Seraph, or literally meaning flying serpent, and is associated with Philistia and the Negev, lands which were traditionally the home of the descendants of the Nephilim after the deluge. The brazen serpent, which was made by Moses at God's command, was revered in the temple sanctuary until the 8th century BC, when, according to Kings 18, King Hezekiah, angry over idol worship, broke the bronze serpent that Moses had made. It is doubtful if the original seraph made by Moses about 1400 BC and that it survived till this time. In either case, it demonstrates that the worship of serpent gods was well established among the Israelites. During the period of the Judge and Kings, it suggests that Yahweh had at least at one time been identified with the serpent god. The term seraph has worried biblical translators and commentators over the years. It is translated as fiery serpent in the King James Version. However, the modern tendency is not to translate at all, but to render the Hebrew word as given. Seraph does not fit any convenient classification or translation. It seems more probable that it is borrowed from the Canaanite word, who acquired it from their Mesopotamian heritage. The roots of the term may well be Mesopotamian. The flying or fiery serpent atop a pole worshipped for its healing properties symbolically represents Enki, the Sumerian god of healing, who is often associated with the snake symbol. There is also a curious resemblance of the snake wrapped around a pole with the later Caduceus of the Greeks. In the Gilgamesh epic, the serpent which steals the magic plant from the hero is called Siru, and the similarity of the words suggests a common origin. The term is also encountered in Hindu mythology, which has Sumerian influences. The Nagas, the mysterious serpent gods who dwelt in India in ancient days, were called Sarpa, or serpents. In her studies on Hindu religion, the theosophist Madame Helena Blavatsky asserts that the Nagas, or Sarpa of India, unquestionably the Jewish seraphim, are derived from the Sarapi or Sarpa, meaning serpent. There is a little known ancient religious document which not only refers to the serpent gods, but also cryptically to the gods of the Sumerian pantheon. As such, this Christian hymn probably has its origins in a Sumerian prayer. Called the Prayer of Joseph, it is a group of magical papyri, the Greek origin, and dated to the 2nd century AD. It starts out as a hymn of praise. Father of the patriarchs, Father of all things, Father of the powers of the cosmos, Creator of all, Creator of the angels and archangels, the Creator of the redeeming names, I invoke you. After a few more invocations, the prayer continues dramatically. You who sit upon the mountain of Holy Sinai, you who sit upon the sea, you who sit upon the serpent gods, the God who sits upon the sun god. This is interesting and pertinent for a number of reasons. Besides the tacit reference to the serpent gods, it also refers to a god who sits upon the sea. Although the line is incomplete, suspiciously so, all the missing words are the critical ones, it appears to be veiled reference to the water god Enki and his water palace. The sun god referred to is presumably Utu Shamash, just as the god of Mount Sinai is Ishkur or Adad. Thus, the invocation seems to be addressed to Enlil, who is also known as Zeus, the ruling god of the Canaanite pantheon, who later became known as El in the Old Testament. Furthermore, the redeeming names are probably the Tablets of Destiny, or the divine names, which have been equated with that of the Sumerians. Serpent gods are not just found in history or mythology of the ancient Middle East. Dragons, flying serpents, and the serpent gods appear in the mythology of people throughout the world, and everywhere are the creators and benevolent ancestors of man. In some cultures, there also remains the lingering memory of a serpent race that was once cruel and barbaric. The Serpent Gods in the Indus Valley Civilization. Arada is often mentioned in the Sumerian literature as a faraway land controlled by the goddess Inanna from her city known as Uruk. According to the epic Emekar and the Lord of Arada, it lay beyond Anshan, now present-day Iran, and a journey to Arada required the crossing of 7 mountains and the dreaded river Kur. It has been suggested that Arada may be the same as Harappa, the lost Indus Valley civilization. Harappa, along with Mohenjo-Daro, was a city of ancient Dravidians, the legendary serpent people who preceded the Aryan occupation of India. In the 1920s, archaeologists made some amazing discoveries in the Indus River Valley. The ruins of two large ancient cities were excavated. One called Mohenjo-Daro was on the Indus River proper. The other, Harappa, was on the Ravi, a major branch of the Indus located in the Punjab or Land of the Five Rivers. Like the cities of Mesopotamia and the Nile Valley, they were built on the alluvial plains. However, unlike these other cities, Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa seem to have sprung up fully planned. Both were identical in layout. While no ziggurats were found, each city had a mound 10 meters high, a sort of artificial platform. These cities did not evolve from primitive villages, but were completed as cities within a century or so. They were built from scratch, as if by an outside force. In other words, they were constructed as a colony, probably by the Sumerians and presumably by Enki, their chief engineer. The city sprang up about 3500 to 3000 BC and later came to a violent end around 2000 BC or soon thereafter, according to archaeological evidence. What has puzzled historians is that the people who lived here are not related to the Aryans who came some 500 to 600 years later and settled in the Punjab or Gangetic Plain. Like the ancient Sumerians, the people of the Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa spoke an unknown language. Artifacts found here also link it with the Valley of Mesopotamia. Button seals from these sites are very similar in style to the cylinder seals of Sumer. In fact, one shows a wild man wrestling two beasts, very similar to the one of Gilgamesh standing between and strangling two lions. These two cities are probably none other than the Sumerian colonies, which were established after the world became inhabitable again after the Great Deluge. It has been suggested by historians that these cities were the center of the Dravidian culture and inhabited by the Nagas, a race of serpent men. The Nagas, the serpent race of ancient India. The ancient book of Dzogchen, probably the oldest of Sanskrit sources, speaks of a serpent race which descended from the skies and taught mankind. Madam H. P. Blavatsky spent 3 years in Tibet, Bhutan, and Sikkim. According to thousands of Sanskrit sources, which were compiled into the Book of Dzogchen. These sources concern the ancient people called the Nagas or Sarpa, which were semi-divine beings with a human face and the tail of a dragon. Blavatsky believed that these Sarpa are undoubtedly the seraphim of the Old Testament. The seraphim, which thus had the same roots as the Sarpa in ancient India. Hindu mythology and literature is also replete with sexual liaisons of gods and mankind, and the procreation of numerous strange beings called Dravidian and Daisyas. The race reportedly lived in large walled cities. They were a coarse, cannibalistic people, dark skin and flat noses. The Aryans who came later ran into the remnants of these serpent people. They are vividly described in the Ramayana. Near Bogota stands a place where the 12 hosts of the serpent race, a broad-wayed city, walled and barred, which watchful legions keep and guard. The fiercest of the serpent youth, each awful with his venom tooth, enthroned in his imperial hall, is Vasuki who rules them all. The Antediluvian Dravidians had been wiped out by the deluge. When the earth was repopulated, Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro became the center of Dravidian culture. Much of the evidence of the Dravidian, Dasyas, and Nagas were all different names for these people can be found in the great epics of India, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. Both epics concern the early Aryan contacts with these serpent people, some of which were friendly, others were hostile. Due to the intermarriage of the Aryans with these people, a sort of ambience, a love-hate relationship, seems to permeate these two great epics. In the epic Mahabharata, a group of celestials arrive by aerial car to attend the wedding feast of the Aryan kings. The gods came in cloud-borne chariots, came to view the scene. Winged supernas, scaly nagas, bright celestial cars in concourse sailed upon the cloudless sky. These nagas intermarried with Aryans, producing kings and heroes. For example, in the Red Veda, there are names like Devadasa, which indicate that there was some crossbreeding between the Dasyas and the Aryans soon after 1500 BC. Many of the ancient Hindu gods made it with humans, like in Sumer, produced a hybrid mammal reptile. The semi-divine kings, which resound throughout the literature of both Sumer and India. The Hindu literature of India asserts that divine people had descended and conducted biological experiments with apes. In fact, Hanuman, the monkey god, with Rama, is the hero of the epic of the Ramayana, was conceived when the god Shiva gave a sacred cake to Anjan, the ape. This obvious reference to a genetic experiment produced by Hanuman, the super monkey, very much reminiscent of the Enkidu of the Gilgamesh epic. According to the linguistic and mythological research, the Hindu god Shiva would have been the equivalent of the Nibiru god Enki. The Hindu epics about the serpent gods. One of the great epics of India, the Ramayana, is the story of Sita, the bride of the northern prince called Rama, who is abducted by Ravana, the serpent king of Ceylon, which is modern-day Sri Lanka. Rama chases the army of Ravana across India with the help of a force of monkeys under the command of the monkey general Hanuman. Ravana retreats to his island kingdom of Ceylon, supposedly safe from pursuit. But Hanuman builds a bridge of boulders across the straits, separating the island from the mainland, and Sita is rescued by Rama. Throughout the story, Ravana is described in barbaric terms. He feeds on humans and drinks the blood of his foes. He is formidable in battle and almost defeats Rama when he uses his special Naga weapon, described as a Naga dart serpent noose, which seems to paralyze his enemies and drain their energy and life force. Like all divine and semi-divine creatures in mythology, Ravana had access to sophisticated weapons. Ceylon, the island kingdom of Ravana, is the stronghold of the Nagas. It is described as the home of the Nagas in very ancient Chinese sources. In one of the first literary references to Ceylon, when it traded with China before the Aryan occupation of India, it is described as a land of strange reptilian-like creatures. Because of its gems and spices and its convenient location to an entrepot, it became popular with Chinese merchants. Fa Hsien, the Chinese pilgrim trader, disclosed that originally the island was occupied by Nagas or serpent deities of whom merchants of various countries carried on with trade. The Nagas never showed themselves to the outsiders. They simply set forth their precious commodities with price labels and attached them. The visiting merchants made their purchases according to price and took the things away. The other great epic of India is the Mahabharata, the longest and perhaps the greatest epic poem in any language. Much older than the Ramayana, it consists of 88,000 verses. The main theme is the rivalry between two branches of the same family, the Kurus, the Pandavas, and the Kauravas fight a war which culminates in near destruction of both branches of the family in the great battle of Kurukshetra. As the story begins, King Parikshit of the Kauravas shoot a deer while hunting with a bow and arrow. Pursuing the deer, he asks if he had seen the wounded deer. Observing a veil of silence, the sage did not answer. The angered Parikshit, who then took a dead snake and placed it around the sage's neck. The ascetic's son, Signa, was incensed and put a curse on Parikshit. Thus started the blood feud between the two families. Significantly, a third party intervenes. Angry over the blasphemous use of one of their own kind, the serpent gods enter the story. Taksaka, the king of the serpent people, sends snakes who cause the death of Parikshit. The story of the blood feud is actually narrated as something which happened in the dim past. Since the ancient kingdom of Kauras flourished along the upper course of the Ganges in the 13th and 14th centuries BC, the events may have taken place in the early days of the Aryan invasion when there was much more intercourse with the Nagas. The Mahabharata story begins with the great sacrifice of King Janmajiya, as the story is narrated by the sage Vyasa, the son of Parikshit. King Janmajiya performs a ceremony to avenge his father's death. A snake sacrifice called the Yanja. Its purpose is totally to destroy the Nagas, the serpent gods which could supposedly assume snake or human form at will, and one of which killed Parikshit. In the ritual, the priest invokes the name of the serpents as they toss live snakes into the fire. Astika, the son of the serpent king Taksaka, intervenes and pleads with Janmajiya to let his relatives live. The war stories and other narratives were told as revolving tales at these sacrifices, which were of long duration. It is the view of the Indian historian D.D. Kasambi that the Yanji itself was not so much an account of a great war, but rather it was the story of the great Yanji sacrifice. In other words, it was a symbolic ceremony of the serpent ancestors, while at the same time expelling them from their cultural heritage. In the struggle between the two branches of the Kurus to control the plains of the upper Ganges, there is a reflection of the wars of the sons of Enlil and Enki in the area of the Mesopotamia Valley. In the Hindu epic, the Pandavas seems to be victor since they regained most of their kingdom which had been lost earlier. Started with conventional weapons of the period, such as spears, swords, bow and arrow, the war escalates into the use of more powerful and sophisticated ones supplied by the gods on both sides. These weapons have all the characteristics of modern missile and nuclear systems. In one instance, one side hurls a missile which is countered by an opposing missile in the sky. The explosion of the two missiles as they meet causes many deaths below on the ground. The battle has modern connotations. It is as if one side launched a ballistic missile which was countered by a nuclear-tipped anti-ballistic missile and destroys the incoming missile, causing a deadly rain of radioactive fallout. After a prolonged war, the Kauravas find themselves losing and in desperate straits. It is then that they decide to end the war with the use of forbidden tactics. In the middle of the night, they descend on the unsuspecting, sleeping Pandavas and slaughter most of the warriors. Incensed by the breach of the rules of warfare and the decimation of their army, the Pandavas decide that they have no choice but to use the ultimate weapon, the celestial weapon that is capable of defeating all other weapons. The leader of the Kauravas decides to discharge a similar weapon, one which apparently produces radioactivity, for he declares, "I will direct this weapon upon the wombs of the Pandava women." He predicts that Kuru line will become extinct, for the fetus will die. His warning comes true, for the weapons produce sterility in all Pandava women. The war between Kuru cousins finally ends in a stalemate with the near obliteration of both branches of the family. The Serpent Gods and Dragons in Chinese History. While the Serpent God shows up in the form of the dragon in Chinese history and mythology, there is no doubt that we are dealing with the winged-legged serpent or Naga of the Hindus. China chose the dragon as the national emblem for profound reasons. They believe that the celestial dragon was the father of the first dynasty of divine emperors, and as a result, the dragon's pictorial emblem became regarded as inspiring divine beneficence to the land of China. According to Chinese history, Asian dragons were present at creation and shared the world with mankind. Like the Western serpent, the dragon was linked with the development of man, and it was the dragon that taught him the essential arts such as how to make fire, how to weave nets for fishing, and how to make music. The Chinese dragon was unrivaled in wisdom and its power to confer blessings, and as a result came to symbolize the most beneficent of men, the emperor who believed to have dragon blood. This affinity with the dragon is shown by the imperial accounts of the emperor as he sat on the dragon throne and rode in a dragon boat and even slept in a dragon bed. According to Charles Guild in his classic work on Chinese mythology, the belief in the existence and friendship of the dragon is thoroughly woven into the life of early Chinese history. The Wei King, the most ancient of Chinese books, whose origins are cloaked in mystery, describes the days when a man and dragon lived together peacefully and even intermarried. How the dragons came to represent the emperor and the throne of China and how the chief dragon had its abode in the sky. In the year 212 BC, the emperor Qin Shi Huangti ordered all ancient Chinese books destroyed and the persecution of learned men for a period of 4 years. And as a result of which, at one time 460 savants were buried alive together. During this orgy of suppression of ancient knowledge, the Bai King was considered so sacred that it was specifically exempted from being talked about. In this classic, many of the ancient emperors are described as having dragon-like features, and for example, Huangti, which guild dates back to 2697 BC, the emperor Yao is said to have been conceived by a dragon father and a human mother. Emperor Shun, dated back 2255 BC, is described as having the countenance of a dragon. The serpent as both a symbol of good and evil in ancient Egypt. The duality of the serpent as a source of both good and evil is seen in Egyptian religion, probably due to certain singular historical events. In the Old and Middle Kingdoms, it is benevolent and associated with the gods and immortality. Later, starting with the New Kingdom, and particularly the 18th dynasty, it becomes a sinister creature and an object to be hated and exorcised. On the walls of the tombs of the earlier dynasties, the snake is depicted as a friendly creature which bears the king on his back in the stellar sky. It is symbolic of the kings being carried by the serpent god to the land of immortality, to the land of the gods. At about this time, the snake was adopted as a symbol of kingship or godship and began to appear as the Urius, a divine asp on the headdress of the pharaoh. But in the New Kingdom, after the first kings of the 18th dynasty had rid the country of the hated Huascas, the serpent takes on an evil character. It becomes an evil object to be exorcised at rituals. Called a pep or a pop, it is the manifestation of the far barbaric Hyksos, who invaded and occupied Egypt for hundreds of years. A pop was the original Hyksos ruler, and with the descendants ruled from 14th to the 17th dynasty. Many of the rulers adopted the name Apop, in particular, the last Hyksos king to be defeated by Amoz and Kamus, the founders of the 18th dynasty. Apop possessed many effets and in ceremonies meant to destroy him were cursed by the number of names. The ritual is reminiscent of the Yanzu ceremony of the ancient Hindus, who called out various names of the snakes as they were thrown into the fire. The Egyptian hate was deeply rooted in the memory of the cruel rule of Hyksos, kings who systematically destroyed Egyptian culture and monuments. We shall see that these hated people were none other than the descendants of the Raphaim, the offspring of the Andaluvian Nephilim, who ruled the lands of the Middle East after the Great Deluge. The Serpent Gods in American and African Mythology. Among the Mayas of Central America, snake symbolism is very common. Most of the serpents depicted in their art are feathered, indicating the ability to fly. The ancient Mayan book Shilambalam relates to the first inhabitants of the Yucatan were the Shans, or people of the serpent, who came across the sea from the east led by Itzamna, a serpent god. He was the most important deity in the Mayan pantheon, and as the dominant sky god, ruler of the heavens. He is one of the few Mayan gods not to be associated with death and destruction. Itzamna was a creator god, the one who infused the breath of life into man. As such, he fits the description of the Sumerian god Enki perfectly. Eric Thompson, the Dean of Mayan Studies, maintains that the term Itzem, from which the god's name is derived, should be translated as lizard or reptile. In fact, Itzamna, the city of the god Itzamna, literally means the place of the lizard. There are many anthropomorphic forms of the god Itzamna, where he is depicted as half human and half serpent. The benevolent serpent god is also found in the later Mexican mythology in the Aztec civilization, which superseded the Mayan one. Quetzalcoatl is the plumed serpent god who brought the benefits of civilization to Mexico and taught the science of astronomy and mathematics to man. Legends of serpent gods also abound throughout the mythology and religion of Africa. To the Dogon of the Mali and Upper Volta, their ancient god created the sun and moon, then the earth from a lump of clay, and finally the first primitive beings were called the Numu, half human and half snake. In the Nyiruru tribe, legends say that the god sent the first human couple down from heaven when he established the world. The man had a tail and pronounced two maidens and a boy. These in turn bore the chameleon, the father of mankind. Other African tribes also trace their ancestors to lizard-like people.